This is a podfic of Words and Fire by Kieran Okira, read by DZ Diversions. The reading on this podfic is explicit, and no archive warnings apply. The fandom is Be My Favorite, with tags of post-canon, established relationship, praise kink, and P-Song's kink is Cody. This was recorded for Pieces of Stars for the Summer Podfic Swap. Summary. P-Song takes full advantage of Kawi's praise kink while they attend a political event. Author's notes. For Luri Lee, inspired by Praise Me Like You Should. This is all Luri Lee's fault. She got me with this brain worm while I was jet lagged, so I'm gifting it to her because she is a menace of a nemesis. Definitely read her Praise Kink fic as well if you haven't already, as this is very much a follow-up. P-Sang has over 24 tailored suits in his closet, but Kawi only has the one he wore to Pear's wedding. So he's dressed and ready to walk out the door by the time P-Sang even decides on his. Kawi waits on their bed with his arms folded, making a point not to take his phone out of his pocket to entertain himself. He's determined to project the full power of his impatience at the open bathroom door where he can see P-Sang threading his left arm into the sleeve of a crisp white dress shirt. It's not in Kawi's abilities to ignore the muscles and P-Sang's back shifting under the fabric as P-Sang casually buttons it from top down. But he can maintain his unbothered frown like a pro. They've been together long enough now that P-Sang will see through it anyway. But Kawi is a man of principles before rationality. "Stop glaring at me," P-Sang says once his jacket is on, and he's reaching for his tie on the sink counter. "You're going to fuss with your hair for at least 10 minutes if you think you're going to get away with it," Kawi says. "So I'm reminding you that you can't." "With your eyes?" "And now with my words." When P-Sang smiles into the mirror, Kawi feels his lips betray him, transforming from a dignified frown to a childish pout. "P-Sang!" P-Sang glances at him askance with affection and mischief. "Be patient, sweetheart," he says. And, oh, that's not fair. Because they've also been together long enough that Kawi knows that voice, that look, and the heated insinuation behind both. He manages to keep his expression mostly still, but the smug light in P-Sang's eyes informs him it wasn't still enough to hide the very real way he's been affected. He says nothing. "Good boy," P-Sang says. He softens his voice on purpose, staring at Kawi with the full force of his appreciation and adoration. And Kawi's mind veers abruptly off from mild annoyance into pleasure, thick haze. Tightening his folded arms around himself, Kawi says, "Stop that," and scowls at the floor. P-Sang says, I can meet you downstairs if you want to get the car.
No,
Kawi says, ignoring the heat coursing through his body. I'll wait for you. Just hurry up. Deftly tying the bow at his throat, Pisang crosses the room to the door and ducks low, sneaking a sniff kiss against the fixed styled hair at Koi's temple.
You don't want to go ahead without me? He murmurs.
Koi gives Pisang's chest a half-hearted push. Not even half, quarter-hearted at most. Of course, it doesn't even budge Pisang so much as a centimeter away. And Kawi knows his eyes are giving away far too much as Pisang draws back to look at him directly. He and Pisang work so well as a couple because nothing else would feel as right for them. Kawi needs Pisang to tether him for all the reasons his life is golden and worthwhile. And Pisang needs Kawi because it's only here on this planet to set fires in Koi's golden and worthwhile life on a whim. Even after 7 years, Pisang hasn't gotten at all bored of Koi's focused pyromaniac hobby. To punish him, Kawi seizes Pisang's half-tied bow tie, crumpling the fabric in his fist, and drags him into a stubborn, open-mouthed kiss. Pisang, not even surprised, the nightmare, and he gives as good as he gets. As Kawi slides his hands around Pisang's neck, Pisang braces his on Kawi's thighs, close to his hips, calling forward a deluge of memories that shove Kawi into one of Pisang's malicious, whim-based fires. He already didn't want to go to this political event Pisang's mother is hosting, even though he's grateful to her for giving him the love of his life and a place to live. But now he's even less inclined to go. It's only 5 o'clock. They could easily go for 2 rounds and then order in food and snuggle in front of the TV for the rest of the night. They've had hundreds of nights like it by now, so he's backed up by science. However, a little curl of dissatisfaction settles low in Kawai's stomach, like a strand of hair stuck to an unidentifiable part of the face. Before he can overthink, he breaks the kiss with an exaggerated groan and says, "Let's just go." Pisang, breathing heavily and visibly disoriented, figures it out in lightning speed. A slow, troubling smile lifts his mouth. "Are you sure?" He presses his thumb into the tense muscle of Kawai's inner thigh and holds the pressure. "If you don't want to go, we can stay home." He mouths a soft kiss at Kawai's ear. "It would be like any other night." This is deviant behavior. And Kawi tells himself he won't fall for it. Pisang won't be upset with him if he asks for that. Pisang doesn't like attending formal events any more than Kawi does, preferring loose gym clothes and lazy blowjobs and afternoon naps that last 5 hours over tight-fitting suits and small talk and facades. But if Kawi goes to the stupid event with him, if he shows support for Pisang's mother and her world-changing ambitions, He knows Pisan will appreciate it. And that's the root of this stupidness, isn't it? Nothing is more deeply and resoundingly satisfying for Kawhi than seeing Pisan made happy because of something he's done. He pecks a kiss at Pisang's cheek, resigned. "Just do your stupid hair," he says. "I'm setting a timer on my phone, and if you go over, we're staying home." Pisang's genuine answering smile warms Kawhi's core past its normal level, and he tips his head back automatically, appreciatively, when Pisang kisses him with one hand gently framing his face. "You're so good," Pisang whispers. He holds eye contact with Kawhi for so long that it should be uncomfortable, his thumb stroking the plane of Kawhi's cheekbone. But Kawhi leans into it and exhales all the stress from his body. Max calls them revolting all the time. But Max also says that Bingsu is too sweet, so he's been wrong about stuff before. There are over 300 people in attendance, according to a server Kawhi overheard. And Pisang's mother somehow gracefully interacts with all of them. "She targets them in groups," Pisang explains. He knows some of the guests through work, and he's expected to work the room like his mother. But he's done Kawhi the kind act of frequently drawing him to unoccupied spaces in the room so they can be sort of alone for a few minutes at a time. He takes a sip of his champagne, and Kawhi pretends he's not thinking of how Pisang's tongue must be soaked in that unique taste. "Uh-huh," he says, making a dedicated effort to further pretending that he's listening. Pisang holds his pinky out from the champagne flute and gestures subtly to the pair of politicians his mother is listening to with apparent interest. "That guy's married to that woman over there who runs some organization that guy's company sponsors. So my mother's going to shift those guys over to those four women because they're running a similar operation that needs funding." Kamai does try to focus. He likes the work Pisang's mother does. And as she's gotten closer to her son over the years, she's made more and more of a concerted effort to help their community and push for the rights they deserve, like the right to marry. Pisang turns away from the room and checks on Kawhi with a layered but affectionate smile. "How are you holding up?" he asks. "How long do we have to be here again?" Kawhi asks plaintively. Pisang changes his flute glass to the other hand and then slides his dominant arm around Kawhi's waist, ignoring the way Kawhi startles. "We've only been here for 45 minutes, he says, studying the room with a practiced mix of boredom and importance. "Can you make it until 8? 2 hours. He'll die." But Pisang's fingers are resting possessively on his waist over his suit jacket, and Kawhi can admit in his quietest mind voice that he likes when Pisang shows him off at these parties like he's someone to show off. He imagines them looking like a power couple from the other side of the room. Even though Kawhi's just a lyricist, no one here would recognize. When he says, All right. With a heavy dose of resignation, Pisang tightens his arm around him, drawing Kawhi against his warmth and reminding Kawhi of the solid consistency of his presence. "You're doing really well," Pisang says, rubbing Kawhi's side in minute movements. "Thank you for being here with me." The room's harsh lighting softens, and the discordant noises, barks of laughing, fake laughter, chair legs screeching on the wood floors, silverware scraping appetizer dishes, fade to manageable levels. Pisang's gratitude and appreciation disperse into his veins, spreading heat and focus through him in equal measure. Kawhi tucks an arm around Pisang for just a brief grounding touch, and then he says, "Find us someone interesting to talk to." "Asking for miracles, love." "It's either that, or I jump off the balcony and hope there's a hedge to break my fall." "Fine, fine. One miracle coming up." Two steps from their peaceful spot by the ficus plant, their search ends when a biochemical engineer recognizes Pisang and dives in for a hug. And Kawhi gets to spend 17 fascinating minutes trying to figure out why Pisang knows a biochemical engineer. When he walks away, Kawhi stares up at Pisang, who just grins and suddenly mimes throwing a basketball. "Oh," Kawhi says, pointing at the guy's back. "He's the one who sucks at three-pointers!" Pisang stifles a laugh and claps a hand over Kawi's mouth. "Kawhi?" Kawhi says, "He started it," into Pisang's palm. He waits for Pisang to release him once the guy is definitively out of earshot and adds with smugness, "He said he could beat you, and you destroyed him." Pisang preens a little, and Kawhi smiles as he sips his ginger ale. Unfortunately, running into one of Pisang's basketball rivals from school turns out to be the highlight of the people they talk to. Every other person who approaches Pisang is a politician, and Kawhi's energy flags with every artificial interaction. The thing Kawhi has learned to hate about politicians is that they're all on guard, all the time, strategizing with every word and studying their audience's every facial tick. As a result, they can be superficially charming, but completely without substance. And Kawhi finds most of them frustratingly boring to be around. He can only fake interest for so long before he wants to escape his own skin. Pisang doesn't stray far from him, though. They're in this together. And ever since the very first event they attended together as a couple, they've stuck to some very crucial rules, including number 8. Always engage with politicians, business people, and religious figures as a unit. Having someone as impressive, handsome, and wonderful as Pisang by his side gives Kawhi something worthwhile to look at now and then, at least. When they lose the tenacious company of the higher-ranked politicians who wouldn't shut up about the structural issues of his numerous properties in Europe. Kaui slumps against Pisang's side and doesn't care at all how it looks. A woman nearby reacts with concern, but Pisang just flashes his most genial smile and leads Kaui to a quiet spot in the corner where they're shielded by a curtain that could double as a blanket for an elephant. He has 5 houses, Kaui says. 6, Pisang says, ting Kaui's empty glass with thinly veiled amusement. Kaui frowns, ticking off his fingers as he counts. 2 in France, 1 in Belgium, 2 in Italy. You're forgetting his whole opening rant about Brexit. The memory reappears with a vengeance, and Kaui wrinkles his nose to make Pisang laugh. I'll get you another drink. Want to come with or wait here? Kaui tests the door handle beside him and makes a pleased noise when the door opens into a private terrace overlooking the city that only a handful of people are occupying. Pisang's next lap is soft. I'll find you out there in a minute then. Kaui watches him go with a persistent sense of peace in his chest. And when he slips out onto the balcony, he relishes the comparative dark and the wash of less manufactured cool air. They're 2 months into the rainy season, and the day saw a few scattered episodes of torrential rain, leaving the invigorating scent behind. The stone wall has dried, so he leans his arms on it and stares at the squares of light surrounding the hotel Pisang's mother chose for her fancy evening. He's lowered his guard, so he's not prepared to take evasive movements when one of Pisang's colleagues spots him and makes a beeline to the terrace. Pikawi! Fuck. Angel. He drags an approximation of happiness to his face, with all the enthusiasm of the damn gathered ingredients for a meal they won't get to enjoy. And she dabs either side of his face with kisses. She's a recent hire from the Netherlands, and while she might be good at her job, she has some unusual ideas about cultural appropriate etiquette in Thailand. Pisang's other colleague, also Dutch, vehemently disavows her and refuses to allow anyone in the office to assign her behavior to their culture. She's just weird, and she loves Kaui. I'm so happy you're here. I was so bored. Let's spend the rest of the party together. They're 13 stories up. He'd probably just die. Pisang would probably understand. Have you finished that song for the Buzzcocks? You mean the Buzzkills? Them too! Pisang! He suffers through 5 more minutes of her offbeat questions and enthusiasm until he spots Pisang in the room with 2 glasses, trapped by his boss. When their eyes meet, Kaui sees the sincere apology there and closes his eyes as he nods, a clear message of, stay there, I'm fine. Angel's not that bad, really. She's just lonely, new to the country and culture, struggling to find friends. Her peach-colored dress has sweat stains under her arms, and he notices her trying not to show them. He makes a bit more of an effort with her from that point, asking about her dog back home and enjoying the light jump into her eyes as she scrambles to show him 400 videos of a husky whose favorite activity is stomping his front paws while screaming. Kawi's actually enjoying himself when an arm circles his waist and Pisang's chin rests on his shoulder. "Stop using sit-on to flirt with my husband, Angel," Pisang says.
"I wasn't. He asked to see him."
Pisang raises his eyebrows at Kawi, who feels his face hike up a few degrees.
"You did?" "I'm good at socializing," Kawi tells him petulantly, "and we're not married."
Pisang says, "yet," without concern, and presses a firm kiss to the corner of Kawi's mouth. Angel giggles.
"You two are adorable," she says. "Pisang, can we leave yet?"
Kawi raises both eyebrows, extremely interested in the answer himself. As much as he's enjoying Pisang's weight against him, there are better places and positions to enjoy. Pisang notices the feral angle of his hope. Smirking, he tells Angel,
"I'd say you can go, but I have to stick around until some more of the important people leave."
The capital letters are audible. With deceptive sweetness, he asks Kawi,
"Shall I call a cab for you, sweetheart?"
"I'm not leaving without you, and you know it," Kawi says. Angel says, "Aw," and then, "Well, I guess I'll see you at work tomorrow. Pisang, bye, Kawi." Morose, Kawi waves goodbye as Angel takes her bubbly joy and endearing dog videos back into the bright, noisy room to make her exit. He's about to complain when Pisang tugs him behind a white-painted trellis woven through with creepy vines, fully opaque and a perfect hiding spot Kawi wishes he had known about when the night began. Pisang idly splays his hand over Kawi's stomach and traces Kawi's ear with his breath.
"You're amazing,"
Pisang tells him in a low, deliberate voice that forces an urgent tremble through Kawi's body.
"You had no patience for her last time we met, but I saw you trying to make her comfortable. You let me deal with my boss, and I got to watch you."
Pisang slips his hand between the folds of Kawi's jacket to press firm and tight on the thin, sweat-damp fabric underneath.
"I know you'd only do this for me, right?"
"Yes."
I know. "You're perfect, Kawi."
Kawi reaches back and steadies himself on a hand on Pisang's thigh, reminding himself of where they are, even as his mind dives dangerously close to pure arousal.
"My perfect Kawi."
When they were younger, this game, that isn't a game, took Kawi a little while to be comfortable with. He craved Pisang's approval and appreciation to a degree that made him frighteningly vulnerable. It took time for Kawi to trust Pisang's implicitly, to embrace that sometimes
Pisang wants to praise him as much as Kawi needs to hear it. And interlocking that form of communication and physical expressions like this one has made it easier for Kawi to believe Pisang, body and soul, when he says things like this. "Pisang," he says imploringly. He tips his head back on Pisang's shoulder, and his chest rises and falls nervously. They're going to be seen like this, and the entire world will end instantaneously. "Okay," Pisang says, withdrawing his hand. "Shh, it's okay." He gives Kawi a more comforting hug with both arms around his middle, nuzzling the side of his face. "Okay, we're back here. Just breathe. We'll go home when you're ready." "But don't you..." "I truly, sincerely don't give a fuck, sweetheart. I was just teasing you." Kawi elbows him, but he's still fixed in a pleasant high, so he does it laughing. In a move that will probably lose him a few points with his mother, Pisang leads them down a service staircase he found when he cased the place earlier in the week. "I told my mother I was trying to find fire exits," Pisang says, lacing their fingers together as he leads the way around hot pipes and ladders to somewhere. "There's a staff elevator down this way." There's something very Titanic to the whole thing. And Kawi grins, squeezing Pisang's hand, and pulls him into a run through the empty corridor. There's no one to run from, and no reason to do it, except that he's lucky and in love, and there's so much life left for them to live together. He shouldn't be surprised, then, at all, when Pisang pins him to the wall of the elevator car, and there's no other word for it, ravishes his mouth. He seizes Pisang's hips, tighter against his, panting against his mouth, and checks the ceiling quickly for cameras. Finding none, he shoves his tongue against Pisang's, bites his lower lip, and moans when Pisang hypes him up against the wall with both hands under his thighs. It's a familiar move, and Kawi promptly slides his hands into the wet roots of Pisang's coiffed hair, bracketing Pisang's head protectively with his forearms. He wraps his calves around Pisang's waist, crossing his ankles at the small of his back, and savors the feeling of being, for the moment and always, Pisang's entire world. As much as Pisang is his. Maybe they are revolting. The elevator coasts to a stop, and by the time the doors open to the bustling commotion, Pisang has slid Kawi to the floor, and they're stumbling out into the wider hallway filled with staff in hysterics again. By all appearances, they're drunk. And despite some lingering, unpleasant memories from a life unlived, Kawi doesn't mind at all. They behave themselves in the cab for propriety, but also because the driver distracts Kawi by coincidentally playing three songs he wrote in a row. And he can't help but mention it. By the time they're dropped off at their building,
Pisang looks absolutely rapturous with him. As they pass the doorman to the elevator bank and the open doors of elevator car number 4, Pisang whispers into Kawi's ear, "I think I have a thing for you being social." "You just have a thing for me, weirdo."
Yes, I do.
And the elevator doors close right on Pisang grabbing hold of Kawi's neck and backing him against the mirrored wall. There are definitely cameras in here, but the flash of heat through Kawi persuades him not to care. Everyone in the building has probably seen them kissing at this point. And while Kawi will always be generally indignant about it, he's also a little proud of how easily he can make Pisang come apart at the seams for him like this. What did he do tonight? Hold his complaining and talk to a few people. And now Pisang is trying to consume him whole. The last stretch to their apartment is the longest. And Kawi moans in genuine distress when Pisang drops the keys. He's about to implode here. Inside, finally, Kawi asks between kisses, "How long do you want to do this?" Pisang flings Kawi's blazer at the couch with a personal grudge. "All night," he says, fusing his mouth to Kawi's throat, literally until the sun rises. "No marks," Kawi whines. "One," Pisang negotiates. "Not the neck." "Thigh?" "Ugh, fuck. Fine. That's my good boy." Set alight all over again, Kawi claws off Pisang's shirt, splitting 3 buttons at the bottom. As they clatter on the floor, Pisang lifts Kawi again and Kwai tips against him, holding him around the shoulders and licking into his mouth without grace or propriety of any kind. He didn't want to go to the party. He didn't want to spend a second of it without Pisang. And his reward for getting through both is this. "Did you really mean it?" Kawi asks, cradling Pisang's head in both hands as Pisang carries him to the bed. When Pisang makes a prompting noise, his hair wrecked and his lips swollen from Kawi's attacking them for the last hour, Kawi says, "All night?" with a rush of adrenaline and hope and a little embarrassment that will never really go away. "I never joke about our sex life," Pisang says, dropping Kawi on the foot of the bed. "First round quick to get out the edge off, then prep, shower, and back to bed for 5 hours. Sound good?" He's probably only 10% kidding. And it's the seriousness of the rest of it that has Kawi reaching for him to drag Pisang's mouth back to his. He used to think he didn't deserve this, but he got through it by deciding that he would be what Pisang deserved instead. Kawi clumsily unbuttons his own shirt, flat on his back, while Pisang sucks a dark mark in his inner thigh. His chest is heaving when Pisang glances up and says, "Don't take it off. It's hot. Just leave it unbuttoned like that." Koi doesn't argue. He also doesn't question it when Pisang straddles his waist, naked, unbuttons his cuffs, and rolls his sleeves up one at a time to the elbow. "You're so gorgeous," Pisang whispers, looking at Kawi underneath him. "Sometimes I think you can't be mine." Kawi inhales, and this time he's gentler when he draws Pisang down to kiss him. It's so easy for him to forget that even though Pisang didn't suffer as much in this timeline as he did in the others, he still put up with a lot of uncertainty before they met. In any timeline branched from the moment Kawi found that crystal ball, Pisang would have always carried the same ghosts of some very specific worries. "Yours," Kawi whispers, "in every life, no matter what." It's a balm that he wants for himself, but it does something to Pisang too, something that makes his eyes close and his lips soften against Kawi's, makes him cup Kawi's face in his hands and touch their foreheads together. "I love you," Pisang tells him, simple and sweet like always. They've been together for years, and there are years more to learn everything there is to know about each other, to grow together and see new things together, to become better people together. And they already trust each other this much. What a miracle that is. When Kawi takes him in his mouth, he closes his eyes to the sound of Pisang's broken breath and shaking moans. He has a good deal of finesse at doing this now, but the ferocious need rapidly builds up to a feverish pace, messy and quick the way Pisang wants it. The obscene noises drive him on faster and hungrier. And when Pisang finishes with a shout, Kawi swallows it all possessively. The bitter taste is one Kawi's acquired over the years, and Pisang doesn't seem to mind when he shares it. Kissing Pisang deep and slow, showing off well he's taken care of him. "So good," Pisang whispers, and Kawi's cock twitches in his hand as he strokes him in an unrelenting, knowing grip. "You did so well tonight. I saw everything. Every time you wanted to yawn or complain or jump off the terrace." Kawi laughs, hiccuping around a desperate noise. His left hand fisted around the sheets and his right hand locked in Pisang's left, pinned beside his head. "You did it for me, didn't you, sweetheart?" Pisang looks at him so intensely. It's as hard for Kawi not to hide from it as it is impossible to look away. He nods, whining as his body ratchets closer to the edge. "Pisang, I've got you. Let it go, love." With a sharp, clear cry, Kawi tucks his face against Pisang's neck and releases. letting Pisang work him through it while cradling him close to his body. He's drifting, almost insensated, except he's never felt quite so cherished or happy. After a few minutes of recuperating, trading kisses whenever it occurs to them to do so, Koei rests his head on Pisang's sternum and sighs with something between bliss and annoyance that they forgot to put towels down to save the sheets. "Can I get up to get you water?" Pisang murmurs, kissing his forehead. "Maybe you can start prepping in the meantime." "I can't do that all night," Koei declares. I'll have a heart attack." "You always say that the first time. You could go again in 10. "You know too much about my body." Koei kicks Pisang to the edge of the bed and pulls the duvet over himself. "I need a 20-minute nap first, and water, and to be held." He glares meaningly at Pisang, only his eyes visible. Pisang answers with a sweet, uncomplicated smile and a warm kiss to the forehead. "Whatever you want, you earned it." "2 months, no parties." "Sure. Marathon sex is still on the table, though, I hope." "Whatever. Maybe. We'll see what you say in 10 minutes. 20! "You know you won't hold off that long." "Go get my water." "Yes, love." The end. Reader's Notes, thank you so much to Kira no Kira for having blanket permission to Podfic. If you made it this far, please consider going back to leave kudos and comments to the original story on AO3. And thanks for listening.